Welcome to Commander Central, episode 43. Today we're going to talk about cards that see play in EDH that have weird, specific interactions that people often don't understand or screw up, us included. Well, I mean, we really don't screw up ever. We don't make like 14 or 15 errors in a single game.
Oh, there's one card on here that we always argue about, and I'll bring it up when we're talking about it.
These are almost all cards that, like, we've had personal experience going badly in games or having some weird interaction. So that's what we're going to talk about today. First, we'll do the usual thing where we discuss games we played and anything else on our minds. I'm Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.
How is everyone doing this? Well, I guess by the time people hear this, it'll be GP Vegas week.
We'll be in the air.
Pre-week. Yeah, we'll be in the air when this airs. Like, literally, we'll be flying when this airs on Monday.
Don't pull an Alabama on me.
An Alabama?
Isn't that the band that crashed?
Oh, it is. Leonard Skinner.
It wasn't Leonard Skinner?
It was Leonard Skinner, yeah.
Oh, they sing Sweet Home Alabama.
Sweet Home Alabama. There we go. We will try to avoid that. But if the plane goes down, you are welcome to carry on the podcast by yourself. Like that last member of Leonard Skinner still has part of the band together. So it'll just be Chris and...
Challenge accepted. Yeah.
You get my cards.
You know what? You can have mine too.
Oh, God.
Including all the new stuff.
I know. That's not sorted. It's going to be a nightmare.
It's a mess right now.
I don't want to see your office. It probably looks like a shit storm hit it.
Oh, I got everything in. Like, so I have my computer desk, and there's a chair there, and I'm surrounded. But it's like behind me. There's like a semicircle of just stacks of stuff. Because I bought a giant collection the other day, so I'm still sorting through it. And then I was doing really good at first. I'm going through it. I'm like sorting anything that I know is worth like a nickel or a dime to save. And after like 3 hours of going through stuff, I'm just like, if it's not...
It's not over like two bucks.
A buck or $2. I don't even want to deal with it right now, so I'm just throwing it to the side. So that's like a next winter project to pull the nickels and dimes out. So Chris was recently, we mentioned it last week, that there was a 1 year anniversary tournament at our store, D20. Chris top aided that in playing Modern.
Yes, I did.
So how was your day all told?
Pretty good. I got paired up with one of my teammates in round three. And pretty much, he beat me, but I didn't even want to play the match, to be honest with you. And then
bad matchup for you, too.
Yeah. Round six, the guy, instead of drawing in a top eight, he's like, oh, we're going to play. I'm like, oh. And then I got tilted really bad. He ended up beating me. I was very professional about it. Still made top eight. And then he lost immediately in the first round, and then I just felt, like that... awesomeness inside of you, like, see, we should have just drew. You wouldn't have had to play the guy that you played,
but he had to go for it.
Yep.
And your friend and Nate wound up winning.
Yep, that was my teammate who ended up beating me in round three.
Said he lost. Do you think he lost one game the whole day?
Yep, I do believe it was actually he lost two games, one in Swiss to Dredge, and then in the finals to Dredge. But otherwise, he was 2-0 the whole day.
Dredge draws that nut hand, you're just gonna lose.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Especially when they're on the play.
Yeah. So, we have Battle Bond pre-release. So, they pushed our Battle Bond pre-release back a week because of the store anniversary.
Yep.
It's actually not pre-release. It's actually release.
So, it's actually the release is going to be the only event we have. But we're going to go to that this week and do some Battle Bond because I haven't actually played it yet.
Right.
It's been out for a week and I haven't done it yet.
It comes out this weekend.
Well,
last weekend was approved.
Right.
And Phil did say he has the partner packs for the event, so he saved them.
Yep.
You got that pre-release pack, I guess is what I would call it. So
yeah, good deal. So I'm looking forward to that, and I'm going to play that at Vegas for sure.
Oh, yeah, there's the sealed box tournament. Yeah.
That'll be fun. And there's also the Commander Championship that's announced now on Friday in Vegas.
That I'm playing in.
I'm going to play in it. I figured out what's going to happen, though, because it's a championship, so there's actually people going to be playing seriously. So I'm just going to get crushed, I think, in the first two rounds. I'm not going to play a serious deck. Recce's fine, but it's not going to win, like, because there's going to be people that are playing, like, CEDH-level decks there. And I'm just going to get steamrolled by, like, Breakfast Hulk or something in the first round, and then I'll go play in the loser bracket and have some fun. So that's what I'm imagining is going to happen. I'll go 0-2.
Super curious how they're going to make this work in a pod format.
Yeah, I don't know either how it's... Because it's six rounds, I think.
Six rounds of Swiss, then that's going to pare it down to the final pot of four, apparently.
So I have a feeling it's going to wind up being like the try-hard bracket at the end, and then everybody else goofing around after they go 0-2 and 0-3 or something. So
I know a couple of people have turn three combo decks you could borrow if yeah, you I really mean, want to be serious
I
about
could.
It.
I mean, I've read about enough of the Boon Weaver combo decks and Breakfast Hulk and stuff like that. It just doesn't seem interesting to me. I'd rather play a fun, goofy deck. My goal, though, my GP Vegas goal, I kind of think I mentioned it in the last show, but I'm going to try to do 50 Commander games when we're there. So I'm trying to knock out 50 Commander games in, what, 5 days?
All of our listeners, whoever you guys play with, Dana, let me know how many play mistakes he makes towards the end of the
oh,
day.
Man, I'm going to be a mess.
That's my goal for Vegas. I'm just going to keep track of game one, Dana did fine. Game two,
game 46.
That's where it went. Game 46, he brought out Yu-Gi-Oh cards. I don't know what's going on.
He mulled down to two.
We lost him at the blackjack table for a few hours.
Yeah, that's exactly how it's going to go. All right. Anything social media worth talking about this week?
We do have one announcement to make.
Okay.
Attraxable has been moved.
Oh, yeah. That's going to be on Saturday
it
now?
It is on Saturday now. Okay. Contrary to what we have been advertising on Friday is once we talk to everybody who's involved, enough of us were participating in the Commander Championship Tournament or had other stuff they wanted to do.
There's like a charity event that Commander is doing on Friday night.
Night, yep.
So we'll do it on Saturday. That's fine.
Yep. So we said we want to make sure it gets enough attention because we've been building this since January.
CCO just needed another day to get ready.
I'm pretty sure that's what it was. They were, I mean, I get it. Like, you need to practice to play with the big boys. You don't just go from minor league ball to the majors.
They have to get all their cards translated from French to English.
Right. Right. Turn all the boots into abouts. So that'll be okay. So that'll be on Saturday, and we'll update on Twitter with that as we go along. We also need to announce our upcoming June contests. First one is the one we'll do on Twitter. It'll be hashtag CMDR June.
Perfect.
I just thought of that.
I can tell by your expression.
I looked at Max and shrugged, and I'm like, all right, that'll work. So that's going to be a collection of cards that we're going to get autographed by various artists when we're at GP Vegas. So we don't know what cards we're going to do yet or what artists are going to be. We'll probably post that next week once we get them done. But that's going to be June's giveaway for people on Twitter who use the hashtag CMDRJune.
And for the Patreon-only contest, so if you become a Patreon by July 1st, or if you are a current Patreon supporter, we are going to give away our Attraxable deck.
Yay, the championship
deck. The championship deck, yes. We might make a little few tweaks just so, you know, a lot of those cards came from our own personal collections.
Yeah, because I think it's a $250 budget, and right now 238 of it is in the Bayou.
Yeah.
So, but it'll be fine. It'll be a fine deck. It'll function just fine otherwise.
And attract some...
I was going to say, like, attract some make the rest of it.
Actually, I don't think Bayou is 238 anymore. I think it's over...
Probably.
Probably over 300 at this point.
But yes, we will be giving away a very close rendition of our Attraxable deck.
There's probably going to still be little bits of Canadian stuck in it after we're finished. So we'll clean it up, brush off the moose chunks and bits of goose, and send it on to you in July. So that is the plan for the two giveaways we have coming up.
Yes.
And we appreciate everything everybody does, both supporting us online and on Patreon. Also, we got our pins in that we've been talking about. We didn't send any out yet because I've been busy this week getting ready to go to Vegas, and I'm not going to do it next week because we'll be in Vegas.
In Vegas.
So the week after, we'll get those in the mail to everyone who's on Patreon currently right now. And I sent a few other ones out to people that just asked that are friends online as well. So we'll also have them in Vegas. So if you happen to wander up to Max or myself and ask very nicely for a pin, we will probably give you one.
Yep. And going forward, they will be baked into one of our current reward levels on Patreon. So
yes.
If you join at that level, you will get a pin with the other stuff you get. So,
yeah. All right. What else we got? Anything else exciting? We should give a shout out to our boys at Flipside Gaming.
Yes, Flipside Gaming, one of our homes. If you use promo code CMDR in your checkout, you will get 10% off of your order, which in turn helps us out in the end as well.
It keeps the lights on here in the basement of love.
And they ship fast.
They do. They do. I've actually been really happy with them so far. Chris
doesn't like the love.
The basement of love. I thought it was the basement of doom. We change that every week.
We're flexible.
Yep.
You have to
be in the dungeon of love.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're looking for us on social media, you can find us at
Twitter at CMDR Central. Facebook search us, CMDR Central. YouTube search us, CMDR Central. And online at CMDRCentral.com.
And we're on Patreon by searching CMDR Central.
So, speaking of Patreon, we have a little deck tech here we're going to do for Patreon supporter Scott Paris. It is his Wart the Raid Mother deck. It's called Wart the Stone Rain Mother. So I'm feeling like there's going to be a land destruction sub-theme going on here.
That would be a suggestion, I would suppose.
So first things first, Max, tell us who Wart is.
Wart the Raid Mother is a legendary creature goblin shaman for 4 hybrid gruel, and she's a 3/3. And she has the ability when Wart the Raid Mother enters the battlefield, put 2 1/1 red and green goblin warrior creature tokens into play. And then each red and green instant or sorcery spell you play has conspire. And conspire is, as you play the spell, you may tap 2 untapped creatures you control that share a color with it. When you do, copy it, and you may choose new targets for the spell.
So right away, you can tap those 2 tokens to copy a spell that you cast.
Seems good.
Yeah, that's pretty decent. And we will get this link out for this deck, too, and when this goes live, we'll have it in the show notes, and we'll put it on Twitter, so you can take a look at Scott's deck as well. Okay, so first things first, let's take a look at the lands that are being ran here. It's pretty lean on duels. There is 14 of each basic, 14 forests, 14 mountains, for 36 total lands. So there's only 8 non-basics in the entire deck.
Yeah, I find that kind of lean. I think I would run more basics. I understand the concept of Blood Moon, but...
And he does have a Blood Moon. It's one of his enchantments. Yeah, particularly because even if you play your Blood Moon, you're probably going to be okay just because so much of the deck is red. So I would probably also maybe diversify it just a little bit. I think there's probably some budget constraints working here a little bit, but there's some really cheap duels right now that don't come into play tap too. I would also probably pull out Gruul Guildgate and Rugged Highlands, or at least consider doing that, because they come into play tapped. Whereas Rootbound Crag with that many basics is almost always going to come into play untapped, and it's like $2. Carplusian Forest and Mossfire Valley are both like 3-ish each, and they are almost always going to... Mossfire Valley is... Well, they both come into play untapped every time, but you kind of got to... You lose life with Forest, and Mossfire Valley has to have a mana that you put into it to tap it for 2. But that's never really a problem unless
that's
you,
one of the filter ones.
That's one of the original Odyssey filters. Temple of Abandon, too. Like, if you're running Gruul Guildgate, Temple of Abandon's like 75 cents. And if your land's going to come into play, yeah, you might as well scry if you're going to come and have land come into play tapped. So there's a bunch of really cheap options you could throw in there, either to upgrade the existing tapped lands. And I would also consider Nykthos. It's a 2-color deck. Nykthos can usually support it in a 2-color deck. I mean, worst case in this deck, it taps for colorless. So who cares? But
yeah, I could get by in that.
You only need to have, because I went through and counted, permanents in this deck average 1.8 mana symbols. So if you have 2 permanents out, you're already over 3. So Nykthos is a break even with 2 permanents out. If you're tapping it for colored, if you've got 3 out or 4 out, pretty frequently you're going to be at that point tapping it for 4 or 6 mana. It's like $8 now, so it's not like nothing, but that's relatively cheap. And there are situations where when you are, you know, surging ahead and you have half a dozen things in the field, Nykthos is what lets you lock up that game because you can make so much mana with it.
Very true.
So those are the big ones among the lands I saw. Do you guys have anything particular you wanted to talk about?
Not really land base wise.
I think we mentioned this before we started recording, but Path of Ancestry in the deck.
Yeah.
He's not running a lot of goblins.
There's
so
4 other goblins aside from the commander among the creatures.
I mean, it enters tapped, which isn't great.
And you won't get the scry very often because there's just not that many goblins.
No.
Aside from your commander, and you probably don't want to be replaying, or you're hopefully not replaying your commander that much.
Right. So, I mean, you could swap that out for a Rootbound Crag or any other duel that...
I love Path to Ancestry. I just don't think this is probably the deck for it.
No.
I think you need...
Not enough creatures for it.
You need to probably have 10 creatures that you're casting of the chosen type at least. It doesn't need to be like a full tribal deck, but you probably need to have a certain density. I just don't necessarily think this one is there.
Well, did we also count shamans? because it's, I guess it you shares could, a type. You know, so, I mean, there's a few extra, like, Vexing Shusher and Young Pyromancer.
That's true. You know, I didn't even think of that.
Ewit. So there's a few more.
If your commander has two types, both work.
Right.
That's a good point.
I mean, he's still under 10 just by quickly rolling over everything, but I still think it's probably not as powerful as you think it's going to be in this deck.
All right, moving on.
Shall we do enchantments?
Yes, indeed.
Mighty enchantment.
This will be easy.
There's only three. Yep. we have Blood Moon, Earthcraft, and Squirrel Nest. And, of course, you got the Earthcraft-Squirrel Nest combo right there.
And Blood Moon doing Blood Moon stuff. That's pretty basic.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing really to say there. I mean, there's always a couple decent enchantments a deck could have. But if you're not intentionally running a bunch of enchantments, you want to keep it lean, those all make sense in this deck.
Agreed.
We'll move on to artifacts. There's only five in the deck. So, again, similar to enchantments, it's running pretty lean, which makes sense since the kind of deck is built around copying spells. I'm a huge fan of Primal Amulet in most decks. And this is a really good one because it's going to be easy to flip because there's so many spells. And then once it flips, it makes those spells even stronger. You're copying them both off your commander and off the flipped amulet. I'm a big fan of Pyromancer's Goggles. It's kind of the same way. It synergizes with almost everything in this deck. So I think everything here is really good. The only thing I would have suggested to add maybe is I think Conjurer's Closet works here.
To blink Wart?
Well, like half
or any of the creatures.
Like half the creatures have UTBs in the deck.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, so you get two extra tokens off Wart, which is not nothing.
It's
but
an
like,
extra spell you can copy, though.
Right. There's a bunch of other things that you can.
Siege Gang Commander comes in with three.
Make three more when you blink it. So it lets you reuse things like, I guess, Craterhoof you really can't reuse because it's end of turn, but, more Hornet Queen tokens, or you can get something back with Eternal Witness for a second time, or. So there's a lot of things you can blink here in this deck, I think. I don't 100% know if it is worth it necessarily, but it's close enough that I think it would be worth trying. Particularly because Conjurer's Closet's like $1, so you're not really out much just to test it out.
That's true. I don't notice the Signet in here neither. I don't know if land ramp is really an issue.
There's not a ton of ramp in the deck overall. I guess in green you do have the option to run ramp spells, which you can then copy with Wart. So maybe that's the thought process. Run just spells since we can copy them.
Yeah, I could get behind that.
And that's what he's doing. He has four ramp spells that I can see.
So I can see that, yeah. Which is still maybe a little bit lean for ramp, but, you have to cut corners somewhere. You can't have, 10 draw, 10 ramp, 10, you just can't.
I mean, copying a Cultivate and then copying a Kadama's Reach the next turn, you're just going to fill your hand up too quickly with land. So
right.
It makes sense, I guess.
All right, well, let's move on.
Let's move on to Instants. There are 11 of them. Starting off with Artifact Mutation, which we're going to cover later in the show. It's a great card. It's making him tokens to use to conspire the rest of his stuff.
I like all the whole mutation cycle is pretty solid, particularly Artifact and Aura Mutation. I'm a fan of all those.
He's running two great removal spells with Beast Within and Chaos Warp, so those are just auto-includes, which are great calls. Something that I found pretty interesting was he just runs a lot of more copy spells on top of in case Wart isn't around. He runs stuff like Reverberate, Wild Ricochet, Fork.
But even if Wart is around, copy,
double
copy again.
Yep,
copy the copier. Yeah. And then, oh god, the
math too many
is
copies.
Just,
right.
Too
yeah,
much.
For sure.
So I think all the instants he's running really fit on theme. It looks like his big finisher for an instant is Fall of the Titans, which isn't that hard to pull off for a surge cost at all in this deck. So
and copy it.
Yeah.
So you do it, and then you copy it with one of your multiple ways to copy the spell.
I mean, so you conspire it, you copy it with the amulet, and you copy it with the goggles.
And then fork it or something, right?
And then fork it
and it's
copy
already
hitting the fork.
Two targets. So.
Right. So yeah, that absolutely is a finisher.
Knockout.
The one card I kind of had a question about was Harrow. And I like Harrow generally, but I think you kind of have to need a reason to run Harrow specifically, whether it's to put a land in the yard because you want to do that for some reason, like Riftstone Portal maybe, or
Drown Yard Temple.
And bring it back then.
Bring it back.
Or if you are trying to I don't know. There's just
it's when you're searching for a land that you need into play,
right? Or you get a trigger off a Gitrog monster or something. Yep. But I don't think it's really maybe worth running here.
Yeah, I mean, Harrow gets you basics, so it's not even like something like Crop Rotation where you're going to go get that...
That busted land.
That Nykthos or the Gaia's Cradle or anything like that.
So the one... I would suggest maybe Sky Shroud Claim, which just got a reprint, so it's cheap. It can get you basics. They come into play untapped as well, mm-hmm. and you can get duels if you need fixing. Or maybe even Pyr's Mischief, which was in Battle Bond, and that's the one where you go get a land, any land, and then everyone else has to sacrifice an artifact or enchantment.
Or you can be nice and give them a land, but we don't like to be nice here. So,
no, I think if I pulled that, I would put something in the sorcery slot that I'm not seeing in Blasphemous Act.
Yeah, because that's basically, I mean, I can't think of the last time I've seen Blasphemous Act cost more than 4. I've occasionally seen it for like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
It's almost always a one-man board weight.
Yep.
So, I would probably run Blasphemous Act just in any deck, full stop. If you can, if you're playing red, even if you're in red, white, black with access to every board wipe, I'd still probably run Blasphemous Act.
Because your opponents are going to make up that eight mana for Blasphemous Act.
It's just going to be a one mana board wipe, and that's always great.
Agreed.
Maybe the reason he's not running it, and we'll talk about this more when we get to sorceries, but it kind of looks like he might have a hard time rebuilding if a board wipe happens.
Yeah, and Ward isn't cheap. I mean, she's 6 the first time you drop her, and then, you know, 8, 10, that adds up in a hurry. The deck does have, the curve isn't terrible on it, but there's a lot of spells in that 4-5 range. So that becomes challenging to get out as well, particularly if you're not playing a deck that's running all the ramp in the world.
That is correct. So move on to sorceries, unless there's anything else?
No.
So there's 23 of them. I'm not going to name them all, but basically we have a whole bunch of land destruction.
Yeah.
And a whole bunch of token makers.
Yes. All the good ones.
Yep.
I don't really see anything that I'm completely dislike,
say. No, those are all really good cards. One thing I like in this deck is I'm a fan of the red, draw that's, you know, the rummage effect where, you know, discard a card, draw 2, whatever.
Yep.
You have Cathartic Reunion in here. You have Tormenting Voice. I guess I saw at least one more, maybe not.
Cathartic Reunion.
Reunion.
Yep.
Those play really nicely with the copy effect because the discard is part of the casting cost. So it's not like the spell doesn't say, you know, discard a card, draw 2 cards. The spell says it's part of the cost. So when you copy it, you don't need to discard anything else. So it just turns into a double draw.
It does.
So I really like that here. Although, obviously, you have Harmonize, which is just draw 3 into draw 6.
It's in the wrong color. It's in the wrong blue.
But here, those draw spells, with so many ways to copy them, that's a real nice piece of interaction. I would maybe find a way to get 1 or 2 more draw spells in there.
Rishkar's Expertise.
Yeah, I mean, even on Wart, 6 mana to draw 3 and put something free into play is worth it.
Or copy it and draw 6 and put 2 things into play.
And that's if Wart's in play. If Wart's the best target, there's quite a few like big creatures in here that might be the targets instead of Wart.
Well, yeah, if you get Avenger out and your tokens become big, you just have targets for days.
Yep.
Yeah. Or even, you know, Chancellor of the Forge is a 5-5. Crater Hoof is a 5-5. You got, you know, Dragonlair Spider at 5-6. Green Warden's a 5-4. So there's plenty of, like, decent-sized bodies in here. But if you're stuck hitting Wart, that's perfectly good to do for 6 mana. And it's better if you can copy it. So yeah, Rishkar's Expertise is such a good card. I would probably try to find room for that as well. Although there's no, like, super obvious cuts that where I would say this card is bad, particularly because so many of these cards get copied. Like, maybe Plow Under isn't the best card in the world, but when you copy it and they're putting 4 target lands on top of their library, that's pretty brutal.
You're screwing up their next 4 turns if they aren't drawing extra cards.
And screwing up their current turn because they're, you know, that far behind on mana.
Yep.
Yeah, this deck is kind of deceptive because of the copy effect. Because actually, I made the comment before we were on about, like, I think you're going to have a tough time locking the game down with targeted land destruction. Except for you're not. It's not just one spell. It's not one land. You're copying these land destruction spells most of the time. So that's much more effective when you're hitting 2 lands or, in the case of Plow Under, 4 lands.
Yep.
So what do you guys think? What is your kind of final thoughts in the deck? I did say my, I think it's a little light in draw. I would probably look into adding a couple more draw cards in addition to maybe cleaning up the land base.
I think it's, I've looked at Wart before to build a deck, and I think it's a fragile build. Just because if Wart isn't around, kind of the Conspire game plan goes out of the way, and if you don't have Primal Amulet or the goggles out,
right,
copying stuff, you're spending a lot of mana to cast a spell, then cast Increasing Vengeance or something like that. I think it looks a lot like a lot of fun to play, but it looks fragile, and like I said earlier, it looks like it's going to be hard to rebuild if you get a board wipe, or even two board wipes in a row or something.
I think the lack of removal, I don't know what kind of meta he plays in, but in our meta,
that makes a huge difference.
The lack of removal, I think this deck would fall behind the other decks.
You'd have a tough time catching back up once that person erased off ahead and you don't have a way to board wipe or something. Yeah, that would be a challenge, I think, as well. Yeah, I think overall the problem I've always thought about Wart is it's one of those commanders that wants you to run more cards than you have to do the things you want to do. Like, you need to have a certain amount of tokens available to copy out the spells, so you want token support. And I guess Wart can copy those spells to make twice as many tokens, so that's good. But then you also want spells that do things, and you need ramp to get Wart out, and there's just a lot of things that you need to do to get into a place, and it's really tough to jam them all into a 100-card deck.
Right.
Like some, I mean, not that it, like, you don't always want to run more cards, because it's always tough making cuts in a tuned deck, but some decks it's much easier to get there than it is with other decks, because you're just trying to do so many different things.
Agreed.
And I think Wart is pulling you in different directions sometimes to achieve that goal. But I would like to play this deck, too. Like, I don't think I've ever played against a Wart deck, so that's entirely theory crafting on my part.
I've never played against one, so...
Yeah. Nor have I.
So but if I, you are in Vegas, Scott, track us down, because I want to play the deck.
Oh, yeah.
Same here.
All right. Good deal. Okay, so before we move on to the main show, any games we played that are worth talking about from anybody?
I was sick all week, so I didn't play anything.
And I got to the shop late, and they were like, yeah, Chris left. He wasn't feeling good.
My new deck won one game of three it played. My new token
and
deck.
And you were really close in the second one.
I was really close in the second one, and I just couldn't keep up with the Boros player of all players.
Have you figured out what you need to tweak, or are you just going to play it a few more times?
I think I'm going to play it a few more times, bring it how it is to Vegas, and if anything, make tweaks there.
Okay. I still have to finish Wasatora. I think the cards arrived today, the last ones I needed for it, but I have not had a chance to play it yet. So it'll get its first game in Vegas. One of the 50.
Oh, are you not going to goldfish it? I always consider that as
first game. Yeah, I guess.
That's what we'll do Sunday night in the hotel before we fly out.
Right, there we go. Yeah. I played a game where I got to kick a Rite of Replication onto a Thran Dynamo that I had animated with the Antiquities War, I believe, the third mode of Antiquities War. And I animated my artifacts and then kicked a Rite of Replication onto a Thran Dynamo. So that felt good, having every Thran Dynamo out. But unfortunately, I didn't hit any much draw that game, so I ended every turn with like 30 available mana. And one game I wanted to I'll mention briefly, because we'll touch on this when we get into the show. I was playing a game last Friday night with that same deck and against Dr. Steve's Infect deck, which is Hapatra, black, green. And that's kind of one of the things that inspired this show topic was I had out Mirage Mirror and several blockers, and I was fine. And then he played a Chroma's Memorial to give his guys all flying and swing in. But he didn't think through the next step, which was I can copy a Chroma's Memorial with Mirage Mirror and give my guys flying and protection from black, which he had all black Infect guys out at the time. So that's what kept me alive for like three or four turns until I could get to the place where I could win the game, was because I would use that Mirage Mirror to make a Chroma's Memorial every time, and he couldn't swing through successfully. Until he eventually drew a removal spell, and this is the interaction about Mirage Mirror. He attacked, I went to turn Mirage Mirror into a Chroma's Memorial. He responded by destroying it with, I think a Putrefy.
Okay.
But Mirage Mirror hadn't resolved yet. I spent two mana to turn it into Chroma's Memorial. He went to destroy it. The stack is still active, so at that point, Rajmir has not yet lost the ability to turn into something.
Yep.
So I spent 2 mana to turn it into a land. It then, the stack then resolved, so it turned into a land. Putrefy fizzles because it's an invalid target. And then the trigger's still in effect to turn it into Chroma's Memorial, which case it then turned into Chroma's Memorial. Now, had he waited until the stack cleared and it resolved as a Chroma's Memorial, he'd have been fine. Then he could have hit it. But that's the interaction.
You're bullying new players.
Right, right.
Hey, wow.
I quote you when saying they're not new players anymore.
Exactly. So we'll move into the main topic here, talking about card interactions and Commander that cause problems or that are just kind of weird and interesting. There's all kind of crazy like corner case scenarios out there, but we're just going to focus on things that are kind of common that we've seen that are just weird interactions.
We see
a lot of things that we run into.
Yeah.
Weekly at the shop. Yeah, we yep. run into this all the time.
So I'll start with Mirajmir. And I basically mentioned how that works, but it's not written on the card, but once Mirajmir becomes a copy of a thing, it loses the ability to become a copy of something until the next turn. But that's not true when the ability's in the stack. So, for example, I use example with that Putrefy where I could still respond and make it a land, but you could also, you know, make Mirajmir a copy of a Chroma's Memorial, and then while that trigger's in the stack, spend 2 more to make it a copy of Cabal Coffers, then tap the Cabal Coffers for like 9 mana. After that portion of it resolves, and then it turns into Chroma's Memorial again. So like you can manipulate that in the stack a little bit. It's not, there's not that many things you can do, but there's enough things you can do with it. And I think people often forget that. They just turn it into a thing and then they're done. And there's a lot of cool stuff with Mirajmir beyond it just being awesome. Because it's just awesome.
Ban it.
Max is shaking his head. Man, it's not ban worthy, but like I've never had it out in a game where
I think we need where to make it a ban awesome. List for certain people.
Right.
It's Recky.
Mirajmir, when I've had it out, it's always impacted the game as much as the strongest cards that are out there.
Yep.
I mean, it's fantastic. Maybe that doesn't always do that, but yeah, I love that card. So let's move on to another weird one here, since we touched on that in the games we played section.
Yep. Let's talk about the old Banishing Light. The 3 mana enchantment that when it ETBs, it exiles target non-land permanent opponent controls until Banishing Light leaves the battlefield. Then that permanent returns to its owner's control.
So it's like Oblivion Ring, except for it's not quite like Oblivion Ring.
The way that it's worded. So if you, let's see, how can I put this into good words? If I exile your commander with Banishing Light, you put it in the command zone.
Because you have the option. When it gets exiled, you may move it to your command zone, and people then frequently do.
Yep. Someone destroys Banishing Light, you then have the option of removing it from the command zone and bringing it back to play.
So it kind
of
gets sucked back from the command zone right into play after Banishing Light leaves.
Yep. Unless you recast your commander from the command zone before it leaves.
No, that doesn't work with Oblivion Ring. But Banishing Light, that's how it's, the way it's written to prevent some weird loop with Oblivion Ring that you could do by casting 2 of them.
The loop with Oblivion Ring is you can stack the enter and exit battlefield triggers, where if you stack them correctly, you can permanently exile the card you were exiling.
Okay. So you need to have another way to get Oblivion Ring off the field, but it was relatively easy to do.
Yeah.
So they changed that with Banishing Light. However, the net result of that was once it gets banished and goes to the command zone, if the Banishing Light goes away, it just gets pulled back into play.
Yep, which is...
Well, your choice. You don't have to let it come back in, but you can.
I would totally bring it back in.
I almost always have. And it happens. Like, I've seen that happen before.
Yep. A lot of people don't realize that interaction.
Because it's so unintuitive.
Yep. They always think once it's... I choose to put it in the command zone, I don't have the choice of bringing it back out. Unless I recast it.
And DJ at Jumbo Commander did a YouTube video on this, I don't know, 3 or 4 months ago, I think.
Yeah.
And he walks through, like, step by step what cards it works with, which ones don't. So we'll link his video on there. That's fantastic and well worth watching.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next one with Decree of Pain.
Now, I did mention that there was a card that we always have argued about. And this is the card that we always argue about.
This is Campbell on the show.
Yes. So Decree of Pain is a sorcery for 6 black. Destroy all creatures. They can't be regenerated. And you can draw a card for each creature destroyed this way. You can cycle it and give like -2/-2 and everything, but who does that?
And there's I don't think I've ever seen it cycled.
I have, but that's straightforward. There's really no questions about how that works.
So the reason this gets brought up is while a death trigger and a place in the graveyard trigger are the same thing, essentially, which means you can move your commander, you can use the replacement effect to put in the command zone. So if that was the wording on the card, the opponent who casted that wouldn't get the draw.
So it said if for each creature killed in this way, or each place you put in your graveyard in your way, you would not draw a card for commanders.
Right.
However, it doesn't say that. It says destroy.
It says destroy, yep. Which is a completely different trigger.
Yep. It's pretty much stating that as the spell resolves, the destruction of everything that it hit is what you get to draw off of.
Yep.
Not where they end up at the end of the interaction.
So the reason we're talking about it is because of the commander.
Yes. Like,
do you draw off your commander? And the answer is yeah, you do.
So in a four-player game, if everyone's commanders are out, Decree of Pain, it's a difference between three extra cards that you draw. Technically four if your own is out.
Yep.
I mean, it makes a real difference, and it's really easy to screw up both ways.
Yeah. Because we went back and forth numerous times on this.
Because I think that at first we were like counting all the creatures, and at some point someone like was thinking, well, no, the commanders don't count because it's a replacement trigger. Oh, okay, so we don't count them.
Yep.
And then eventually, we got looking at it, or someone mentioned something, and realize it's a different trigger entirely, so you do in fact draw the cards.
I bet you what happened was someone needed that extra two cards and they're like, no, we're looking this up.
Probably.
Enough of this.
Most likely, yeah.
And we did actually, when we made the notes for the show, I should have mentioned this at the top of the show, but we had a judge take a look over everything, and he confirmed that. So we're not just like making this stuff up. A judge went over all the ways we're phrasing this stuff and the things we're talking about, and he confirmed that they were all kosher. So thank you very much to our friend Lucas for taking a look at these notes.
Yes.
All right. Next up, we will talk about some cards we mentioned during the little deck tech there, Artifact Mutation and Enchantment Mutation. And it's not just those cards this applies to, but those are the best example here. So Artifact Mutation says destroy target artifact. It can't be regenerated, period. And that's important. Create X 1/1 green Saproling creature tokens, where X is that artifact's converted mana cost. So if you hit that Akroma's Memorial that we were talking about earlier, it gets destroyed and you create 7 Saprolings. That seems pretty straightforward.
That seems good.
And it's good, right. The important part about that, though, is that period. And the period kind of makes it almost like a modular spell, where it reads, destroy target artifact, mode 2, create X amount of tokens. So you don't have to actually succeed with part one to have part two work.
Yep.
So if you cast this on someone's
Darksteel Forge,
for example, you can make your
nine tokens,
even if the thing doesn't get destroyed. Or if you destroy someone's whatever and they cast, Heroic Intervention wouldn't work, but say Boros Charm to make yourself indestructible. Same thing would happen.
Yep.
You still get your tokens. So as long as the spell resolves, you get those tokens whether or not thing actually gets destroyed.
Yeah, these are really good cards to play, especially the enchantment one. If you're playing in a meta full of Theros Gods for generals, awesome card to have. Because they play their general and you just like blow it up. Oh, it doesn't die, but I get
free
X
tokens.
Whatever.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of cards this applies to. Like
Mindswipe is the one is how I learned this, because
yeah.
Mindswipe says counter target spell unless its controller pays X, and then they get dealt that much damage. Well, if you try to counter a Supreme Verdict, they're still getting hit with whatever you paid X for.
Yep, right. There's a bunch of spells this applies to, basically. Anything that has like that two clause wording. I mean, technically, Swords to Plowshares and Path to Exile, the second life gain trigger and the land trigger would work if there was some way to keep it from being exiled. There isn't in the game right now. There's no way to stop that from happening. But if there was, you would get the land off Path to Exile even if the creature didn't get exiled.
Yep.
Now, right now, the only way to do it is like Hexproof or something and the spell fizzles because there's only one target.
Yep.
But there's a bunch of cards this applies to. So always like look at your spell that has two effects to see if there's that period there that keeps them from being dependent on one another to be successful.
Grammar.
Yes, indeed.
Woo! Just as Richard Garfield intended.
Exactly like he had it planned out from the beginning.
No.
All right, let's move on to Maze of Ith. So, I don't know. Everyone should be familiar with this. This is one of those big EDH staple cards. But if you're not, pretty much it is a land that taps for no mana. but you can tap it to untap a target attacking creature. Prevent all damage that would be dealt to and dealt by this creature this turn. So basically what the interaction here is you can give a creature pseudo-vigilance, because during the combat step, after they deal damage, you can activate this card to untap them.
So I've hit you in the face, and then you're like, ah, I might as well
untap
my creature, so now it has vigilance to block next turn.
Yes. So under rulings for Maze of Ith, dated 6/8/2016, you can activate Maze of Ith's ability targeting an attacking creature you control during the combat damage step or the end of combat step. It'll be untapped, and the damage it had already done won't be undone. Another card that reacts the same way as Reconnaissance, which is, I do believe it's a one mana white
one
enchantment.
Mana. And you can,
zero.
And you can do it with your own with all of your creatures. Not just one.
For zero, you remove a creature from combat, prevent all damage that it dealt, and all that fun stuff.
Now, I've never seen someone use Maze for Vigilance, just because you can. But the thought process there would be usually, well, I want to save it for my opponent's creatures, while I give mine Vigilance.
Right.
But maybe if you had like some giant beater, or you had like Avacyn, Angel of Hope, or something. That you wanted, or does she has vigilance, but like something along those lines that's like big and indestructible, that can take blocking. You know, everyone swings at you. That's where it makes sense.
The Ur Dragon.
Yeah, something like that. And one more thing, since we're on Maze of Ith, that I'll quick note here, because Chris mentioned it doesn't tap for mana. If someone has an Urborg out,
then it does.
It can tap for mana. And that's an easy thing to miss as well, because you just look at it and see it doesn't tap for mana, so you just don't think about it.
Or a Chromatic Lantern, or
anything
like that.
Yeah. So you can make it get mana if you want to, and don't forget that when you're playing a maze.
Okay, so the next one is the difference between Lifelink and Life Gain, and how they kind of stack on top of each other. So the cards we're going to be talking about are Armadillo Cloak and Unflinching Courage.
There's quite a few different ones, but these are like an easy comparison, because they're so similar.
Yes.
Yep. They're pretty much identical cards,
except for one has lifelink and one just has a life gain.
Yep.
So Unflinching Courage reads: enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has trample and a lifelink. Where Armadillo Cloak says enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has trample. Whenever enchanted creature deals combat damage, whenever it deals damage, you gain that much life. So the common misconception is you just think Armadillo Cloak says lifelink.
Yep.
Because it should have been eroded.
It is not eroded to lifelink.
Yep. But life gain is different than lifelink, because it's a triggered ability. It stacks with the lifelink. So if you put Armadillo Cloak on a creature that already has lifelink, you're going to gain the lifelink off of the combat damage. And then the trigger from Armadillo Cloak will go on the stack.
And you'll gain that life as well.
And you'll gain that much life as well.
Because normally if you have multiple lifelink things, you just gain the life one time.
Right.
But this does, in fact, stack it.
Now, because life gain is a triggered ability, if you were to get hit in the face for lethal, but you block, your life is still going to hit zero before the trigger resolves, so you still die.
Right.
Which is sad.
So if the creature has a life link,
you're fine.
You would survive that, assuming you're getting enough life to keep you at positive life totals, because it happens simultaneously. But the life gain ability is a trigger. So there's like that brief window where it goes in the stack, and you would see where your life is at, and you would just be out of the game if it took you to nothing. Now, that I've never seen that happen. The interaction that mostly matters is stacking two of these in an Enchantress deck. Do you have both of them in your Euro deck? I've got both in my Sigarda deck, too.
I've never actually had them both on at once.
And I have before, but in the first couple times I did it, I assumed they didn't stack, because particularly Armadillo Cloak just got reprinted, I think, in 25 or something.
Eternal Masters.
But prior to that, it didn't have a Modern Border reprint, I don't think.
No, it was from Invasion or something like that.
So I just assumed it was something that had been eroded up to read the correct thing, and never bothered to look, because why would you not assume that?
Right.
Particularly because so many of the old like Shroud cards that just said can't be the target of spells or abilities, it then got eroded to Shroud, or I think Menace, a bunch of them got eroded to Menace. But Lifelink did not, so... Yep.
There's a few of those cards out there. If you're going to play them, make sure you check the errata on them to double check and catch some people off guard.
Yeah. All right. The next one we will talk about is it me next?
Yes.
Yes, sir.
All right. The next one we'll talk about is the CMC and devotion value of tokens. So I hear this a lot. Like, this isn't one that I think we don't know, but we all played during Theros block. People that didn't don't know this. And the reason it mattered in Theros is because you had Pack Rat, which made token copies of things.
Stupid Pack Rat.
And Devotion was a big deal in the Theros Black as well.
Stupid Mono Blue Devotion and Mono Black Devotion. Oh.
Pack Rat was so busted in combination with all the stuff in Theros, too. Yep. That was such a strong deck.
Oh, let's just play a million Pack Rats.
Right.
Gary.
Suck it.
Suck Sorry, listeners. All right. So, tokens have a CMC of 0 unless those tokens are a copy of a thing that has a CMC, in which case it has that same converted mana cost.
Because
so,
they become copies of the card itself.
Right.
Correct.
So if you are making something with or a mutation, and it just says make X amount of tokens, those tokens have a CMC of 0. However, if you have a Pack Rat that makes a copy token, or if you have, I'm trying to think of another example.
Scarab God.
Scarab God, right. Those are copies of a thing. Those have the same CMC as a thing they copied. And that matters when you see things like Austere Command that destroys all things of a certain CMC.
Yep.
Or you see Ratchet Bomb set to 0. We'll blow up all tokens, but it won't blow up the tokens that are a copy of something.
Correct.
So that's where it matters. And it also matters with Nykthos, which is a card we recommended earlier in the Wart deck. Nykthos counts the amount of mana symbols. And if your token is a copy of a thing, it has a CMC, and therefore it has mana symbols on the dice or the little token card you're using. So that matters as well. So what you need to know is a token just created out of thin air, or is it a copy of something? That comes up quite a bit.
Yeah.
Both in terms of the destruction stuff and in terms of the Nykthos tapping for Devotion.
Stupid Theros block.
Yeah.
Screwing everything up.
So speaking of the Theros block.
There we
speaking
go.
Speaking of the stupid Theros block.
Let's move on to the gods of Theros. You had, I do believe, 10 gods, correct?
15.
15. Each color pair and the single colors.
10
duels.
Oh,
I forgot about the
models.
Singles.
Yep.
Yeah, those are the best ones, honestly.
They are.
Yeah.
So, now, for those of you that don't know, Theros gods are both enchantment and creature.
Yep.
Now, when they are in your hand, in your library or on the stack, they have both types.
So if you have a Swan Song that can counter target enchantment, you can Swan Song a Heliod on the stack or a Purphoros on the stack.
Yep. Now, the moment they resolve into the battlefield, they immediately check for Devotion. And if you don't have Devotion, then they become an enchantment. So basically, it's a good way to cheated into play to avoid removal, even though they are indestructible. So you suppose you could avoid Path or Swords.
So if you're playing like in the Purphoros tokens deck, which is a relatively common build,
yep,
and you're not using copy tokens usually, they're just tokens, oftentimes Purphoros never turns into a creature.
Yep. And then a lot of good removal is now dead.
Right, yeah. In matter of fact, I've seen you, Chris, go out of your way to make sure Purphoros didn't get turned into a creature.
Yeah, you don't want him to die. He's right. He is the main thing in the deck.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that's a big one, and that comes up a lot. So just know that when it's being cast, you can, in fact, counter it if it hits creatures. But once it's on the field, once you've passed priority to the point where it resolves, then it turns into whatever the Devotion indicates it is.
Cool. That is true. Yay. Stupid gods. On to the next one. We're going to be talking about auras in relationship to things with Shroud and Hexproof.
So I knew how this... I knew what the end result of this is, but I didn't know how it worked until I looked at the rules on it.
Rule 113.1b says, aura spells are always targeted. These are the only permanent spells with targets. An aura's target is specified by its enchant keyword ability, see rule 702.5, enchant. The targets are chosen as the spell is cast, see another rule earlier in the rulebook. As an aura permanent doesn't target anything, only the spell is targeted.
So, when you cast an aura, essentially, when it's on the stack, it needs to have a valid target in order to be cast.
Right.
Correct.
So if the target has Shroud, you can't hit it. Or if you're trying to put a Dark Soul mutation on someone else's
Sigarda
thing with Hexproof, or Sigarda, you can't do that either because it needs a valid target to even be cast in the first place. And that's unique among permanent spells to enchantment auras. However,
according to rule 303.4f, if an aura is entering the battlefield under a player's control by any means other than by resolving the spell when it is cast, The effect putting it onto the battlefield doesn't specify an object or player and essentially can be attached to anything.
So if there's another way to get an aura into play aside from casting it, it doesn't target, and therefore it can just go onto things via Velcro. I think Velcro. I think that's the correct term. Or sticky tape, one of the two.
Magnetism.
Right, yeah. So like if you blink an aura in your Brago deck, Max, it doesn't matter if Brago has Shroud, it can just go onto him.
Yep.
If you bring a bunch of auras into play off of Replenish or Retether or something, you don't care if the target is Hexproof or Shrouded or whatever. They can just go onto it. And I knew that's how it worked. I knew like that aura, but I didn't know the specific thing about targeting or whatever, and that makes it make a lot more sense that I've seen that now.
Well, I understood it once I read the Zur the Enchanter ability. I'm like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here.
And I assumed in that case, I assumed that was something with how Zur was worded. I didn't really realize it was something inherent to auras.
Yep.
But it isn't. It's just how auras work. Once you can put them in play, that's nothing to do with Zur. It's just how auras work. So, yeah, that totally makes sense in hindsight.
This is not how Richard Garfield envisioned everything.
That was not. Was there even aura? There were local enchantments local at the time. That's right.
No, he's just sitting at his desk.
Watch us try to figure all this crazy stuff out. All right. Next on the list, we have Painful Truths. This came up, at least part of it came up, about 2 weeks ago in a two-color deck. So Painful Truths, for those who don't remember, you draw X cards and lose X life, or X is a number of colors of mana spent to cast Painful Truths. That seems pretty straightforward. It's a three-mana spell. So if you spend all three colors of mana you have access to, then you draw three. Where things get kind of interesting, though, is as of January 2016, you can now generate mana of any color, assuming your land lets you do that. So Exotic Orchard, for example, lets you tap for a mana that any opponent controls, of a land any opponent controls.
Right.
Prior to January 2016, you could only make mana in colors of your commander's color identity. So if your commander was Dimmer, you could only make black-blue. No matter what lands your opponent had, that's all you could actually make. They changed that in January. So even if you are in a two-color deck with Painful Truths, if you have a way to generate a third-color mana, whether it's Chromatic Lantern or City of Brass or
Mana Confluence,
whatever, if you have a way to make mana of an additional color, you can spend three different colors of mana to cast Painful Truths to draw three cards. And the next weird step to this is, if there's a tax effect in play and you can make more colors of mana to cast it, so usually it costs three mana to cast Painful Truths. If someone has like a Thalia out, for example, that makes spell cost, is it one more on Thalia or two? I think it's just one more.
I think it's one more.
That tax is part of the casting cost of the spell, so if you have a way to make a fourth color, you can draw four cards. If you have a way to make all five colors and the tax is knocking it up to five, you can draw five cards off it.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah. So now that's not probably going to happen nearly as often as the two-color deck drawing three because they happen to have a land out, but that also is a difference. So anyway, if you're playing Painful Truth in a two-color deck and you've got some kind of land that makes a third color, keep an eye out for the chance to draw three off it because that's something you can now do.
Well, yeah.
For sure, eh?
Drawing five cards is fun.
You can't draw five cards off Painful Truths.
If there's a tax, you can.
If there's a tax, you can. If there's a Thalia out or something that makes you pay four for it.
True.
Yeah. So
yes, that's the only way you can do it.
Technically could.
I was looking up a weird ruling on something that I'm going to bring up in a little bit.
Oh, you weren't paying attention to this.
No,
show.
I was not. I will completely admit because it just popped in my head and I was like, oh yeah, I remember something like this happening the other day. Okay. So anyways, let's move on. Forget right. My incompetence and all that stuff and make fun of me on Twitter all you want. That's fine. So we'll move on to Sylvan Library or Abundance. Now, Sylvan Library, this is another EDH staple. I hope a lot of people know how this
works.
Such
a good card.
So at the beginning of your draw step, you may draw two additional cards. If you do, choose two cards in your hand, draw on this turn for each of those cards, pay four life, put them on top of your library. So basically, it's a divining top.
That you can choose to keep the extra cards if you want to pay four life per.
Now, Abundance reads, if you would draw a card, you may instead choose land or non-land and reveal cards from top of your library until you reveal the card that was chosen. Then put that card in your hand and put all the others revealed that way on the bottom of your library in any order. Now, because of the draw is replaced with Abundance trigger, should you choose to do that. Should you choose. You can use abundance 3 times and not have to put any cards back or lose life. So this is in accordance with Sylvan Library at the same time.
So if you have Sylvan Library out and abundance out at the same time, you can just basically get 3 cards for no downside.
Evil green players. I don't like you guys.
And Dredge is also the same interaction, because the way Dredge works is if you can choose to, instead of drawing, you can choose to do your Dredge thing.
It's a replacement draw.
So you can replace one of the Sylvan Library draws, or two if you have 2 ways to do so, with Dredge triggers, and it doesn't cost you 4 life. So you just draw your card like you normally would, and then I'm going to now Dredge rather than skip my draw step. I will use my Sylvan Library draws on the Dredge trigger.
I will Dredge 6 with Golgari Grave Troll.
You bet.
And another 6 with the other Golgari Grave Troll in my graveyard.
Which is interesting that you don't have to pay the life for it.
Yeah.
I suppose because you're not technically putting into your hand. You're doing something
different. You're replacing the trigger. So you're getting the extra draw trigger, but you're replacing it, which then works around. It seems like a dumb way to me.
I really want to do it so bad. But doesn't abundance cost like 4 mana?
Abundance is 4 mana. Although it's a decent card. It's not like amazing, but I like abundance well enough. But I've done it before. I have successfully done it in decks. I don't have abundance in any of my decks currently.
Which I'm super curious why I haven't seen this ever done. I've seen a lot of Gitrog Monster combo decks that are Dredge based, and I've never seen them combo Sylvan Library with Dredge.
I wonder why not, because I'm sure a lot of them are running Sylvan Library.
I wonder if they don't understand the interaction.
Maybe. Yeah, could be. We'll have to ask our local
Gitfrogs.
Get good. Yep. Player. See what he says.
Definitely.
On to the next one. Fertilid and Field of Ruin. Reason we're talking about these is they are the only 2 cards in the game that force your opponents to actually search their library. It is not a may. It's not a choice. They have to do it.
So this isn't the kind of thing that comes up that often.
Right.
But
it does in Modern.
Yeah.
Yep. Or when you're playing the Obnix Unshackled, who, when they search your library, you get 10 damage dealt to you.
Yeah, which is something that I've done,
which
I used to do.
Dana, old school, that's vintage Dana.
That was my Mimeoplasm deck around that.
So I'm over here in the corner laughing, because there was this one game that we played, and Dana must have resleeved this deck, but he put the wrong Obnix list
in. I did, that's right.
And
I
he's
did.
Like, I'm going to make you search the Fertilid, and I'm like, okay. Sure. He's like, I'm like, nope, that's wrong Obnix list. He's like, oh no.
I put the wrong one in the deck. I put the land. Is it a landfall one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is usually considered the better one. But I put that one in instead of the other one. I was like, ugh. But I've won multiple games doing that with Fertilid and Obnix before.
Yep.
So again, I don't know how often it's going to come up, but it does come up, and it's something that that's not a may effect on those 2 cards. They have to find it.
For instance, if you tutor something to the top of your library and someone ghost quarters you, you choose not
right,
to search because
exactly,
you want that card. But these cards force you. It's pretty much what it is a force shuffle.
Yeah. And that matters. So know that those are the cards that force it.
Yep. What's the last one on the list today?
The last one on the list was one that Max brought up.
Yes.
Which is Kicker versus Overload. And I still screw this up, too. This is one that's really easy to mess up. And the difference in terms of gameplay is Kicker is an additional cost that you declare when you cast the spell. And Overload is an alternate casting cost.
Yep.
And why that's relevant is alternate costs are only available when you cast a card from your hand. So if it gets cast in any other way, shape, or form, even if you get, it's one of those things where like the next spell you cast is free, that is enough of a change where you cannot overload. So if anything is different than it normally would be, you can't use a replacement effect on the spell and overload it.
I think the best example I can give is Snapcaster and Cyclonic Rift in the graveyard.
Yep. You cannot overload Rift off of Snapcaster because it's a flashback at that point, and that's changing how the spell is. So it has to be something you've cast from your hand. Yes. Whereas Kicker, when you cast a spell, you then choose to pay it. So Kicker, you can really use at any point in time. And that matters way more than you would think.
Because you can make 1,000 Thran Dynamos.
Exactly. Okay, so, man, there's a bunch of these. Like, I started making this list, and there was, if you want to get really weird and pull, hey, if humility's in play and someone does that, what does that do?
No. Call your local judge.
Then you just have, right, then they just start drinking, and yeah, that's no good for
You'd
anybody.
You'd be surprised at how many areas actually don't have judges.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah.
We're privileged to have multiple in our area.
Right, even like on casual commander night, we have people there that are judges that can just, we can be like, hey, judge, and there's like a judge in the room.
Yep.
That's just there playing. That's not something that most people have access to.
That's why Lucas always wins. He just cheats.
He just judges his way to victory.
Lucas, if you're listening, I'm terribly sorry, but the reason that you always win Commander is because you can't win in Modern.
Oh, shots fired. Pew, pew.
He will agree with me. We talked about this the other day. He's like, I can't seem to get Modern to work. I'm like, I don't know what your problem is. You do just fine in Commander, so.
He's not playing Orzhov. Orzhov tokens.
Right, exactly.
I should have a talk with him about that.
Try to play some kind of Orzhov Modern deck. He'd be in good shape. And he I mentioned again, he's the one that went over this rules list for us and yep. made sure everything was kosher. So I want to thank him for giving us a few minutes to make sure these all made sense. So if there's any additional ones you guys think are worth talking about, let us know, because there's so many of them. And maybe you don't encounter them unless someone plays that one particular card. And there's some things that, like, in your meta, everyone knows because it comes up. And until it comes up, you just don't know it. So shoot us a message on Twitter or something. Let us know if there's any particular weird ones in your meta that you guys see that are worth talking about. Is there anything else we want to do before we get out of here for the evening? Let's see. We've already told CCO that they're
going to lose.
Going to get roughed up in Vegas.
I don't know. My butt's asleep right now. That's all I know.
You're ready to get off these. Matt, we need to, the Dungeon of Love needs to have some cushy seating down here.
You too. No, thank you.
Max doesn't want to spend any more time than he has to in the Dungeon of Love.
Right.
I'm going to order one of these headsets and I'm going to sit on the couch or something. That's what I'm going to do.
That's the goal, is recording on your couch and in your boxers in the comfort of your own home. All right. So hopefully we'll see some of you guys at Vegas. Please walk up to Max and I and say hi, and maybe we'll give you a pin and we'll definitely play a game if you want to.
I would also like to put out there, I would like to see a voting tally go. I want to know who you listeners think's going to win a Traxable.
If I was voting, I wouldn't vote for it.
Is our deck together yet?
That's part of the problem. Our deck isn't even entirely together
and
yet.
And I think we're still over budget by $10.
The list is together, but the deck isn't together. And here's what Max keeps like mentioning. We're over budget $10, and I keep like fingers crossed. I'm like, well, Commander Anthology releases on Friday, and hopefully the price of Atraxa drops at that point slide us under the list. So that's what I'm praying for here, is that Atraxa gets a little bit of a haircut in price and then gets us under. I think we'll be fine. I think we'll get it in there.
Now, for everyone who listens and is on social media, I would love to see the vote. I would love to tally it up and see who thinks is going to win.
At this point, I don't even know how many different participants there are.
There are 9.
Jeez.
Patrick made 9 because I forgot him in the group message.
So somehow Commander Time gets 2 people. It gets 2 decks, basically.
Well, they aren't very good at teamwork, it sounds like.
The one thing I know about Patrick's deck, he's running all old creatures. It's a counters deck. But it's not a plus one counters deck. He's running all those old janky creatures that do like, this creature gets a +1/+0 counter, like that kind of stuff. So he's going to like make like little custom pieces of paper to keep track of all his counters. Basically, he's running like the trolliest troll deck mathematically possible. So I want to see that. That's going to be cool. I mean, not cool to keep track of, but like it'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think his is together yet either. So we're not the only slackers here. We've still got a couple days. By the time you listen to the show, the deck will be done because we'll be in the air.
And we'll be gold fishing with it for 3 hours on the flight to Vegas.
So that is our plan. So we'll be back next Monday with a show that we've already recorded.
Yes.
Time travel. We're amazing.
Waka, 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 waka. So you have time travel. I heard there's a new Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure coming out.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Oh, my God. That's going to be.
Can't wait.
Yeah, I definitely am.
All right, let's not go too far. All right,
getting distracted here. So next week, there will not be any GP Vegas talk because it's a time travel show. So the week after, we'll kind of let you guys know what went on in the City of Sin. But until then, I'm Dana.
I'm Max.
And I'm Chris.